designed to encourage, empower, and educate real estate professionals by sharing best practices from business leaders that are proven winners. I'm your host, Kyle Malnati, and this is Calibrate Real Estate. Broadcasting from the Mile High City, you are tuning in to the Calibrate Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Malnati, and our guest today is a good friend and personal business coach of mine, Chris Oakley from Nashville, Tennessee. Chris Oakley and I started working together 3 years ago through the Entree Leadership All Access Coaching Program. And Chris is really an expert at working with business owners, helping them do strategic planning. And so for real estate professionals that are tuning in, this is an opportunity to hear how one of the experts coaches people like ourselves and helps us grow. It's the fourth quarter, and everybody's kind of looking back at what this year was and then also forecasting into the next year. And so I thought this would be a great opportunity to talk to an expert, someone that knows how business owners think and can also help us get unstuck. So Chris, thanks for joining me today on the podcast.
Man, it's great to be here. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to be seen, good to be heard. And so first of all, let's kind of go back a little bit of the history, Chris. How'd you get your start both in business right out of college as well as how did you kind of move into coaching?
Yeah, it's a great question. I've had a lot of different experiences that have kind of attributed to all my life experience in business coaching that I draw from. Business degree from Samford University in Birmingham, Alabama. First job out of college was random, was a tour manager for a bunch of Fox News guys. So used to travel with Oliver North and Neil Cavuto and Sean Hannity and a bunch of those guys, which gave me a unique experience as well. Then was part of building several businesses out of Atlanta, Georgia. And really that led to later on getting connected with Dave Ramsey and working on the Entree Leadership book tour with Dave. And really business has always been my passion. I've focused even on micro enterprise development, micro businesses in third world countries. And so when Dave and I connected, it really was Entree Leadership or nothing for me. I really wanted to be a part of serving small businesses. That's been my personal mission statement for years before I even met Dave and the Entree Leadership Program. And so I had a great opportunity to work with them and help be a part of their business coaching program for the last 5 years. And recently stepped out and working with some consulting and just working with clients, going a little deeper and helping them with the strategic planning and leadership development stuff.
Yeah, that's a perfect segue into why I have you on the show today. We just did this experience over the last 2 weeks, getting together personally, both in Nashville, and then you came here to Denver to consult with me on really how to grow my business. And I think that it's important to state that really every realtor is a business owner, whether you work within a larger company, or if you're a broker owner, you own your own business, you operate your own business. And I think one of the main tenets of the Entree Leadership Coaching Program that you were a part of is that business can feel really lonely at times, especially when you're the leader. And so how do you approach helping a business owner maybe get unstuck as they're thinking about the ways that they've been operating their business and maybe how to grow? And this will dovetail into some of the things that we did personally that we'll dive deep into today.
Yeah, it's funny. I have both perspectives as a business owner myself, but also as helping other folks with strategic planning. It's funny, it's a lot easier as a third party to step in and, you know, I spent time with you and look at your business and help kind of put things in order and help you prioritize stuff. But when it's my own business, when you're working on your own business, man, it's all just jumbled up together. It's messy. It's hard to prioritize and separate. What should I do first? And you just spin your wheels a lot and you have a lot of sideways energy. And so it's really fun for me because it's a lot easier to come help you with your business than it is to even work on my own. And so that's the biggest thing is get around other folks outside of your business, have them speak into your business, have them listen to what's going on and help you really organize your own thoughts and help you then start to prioritize from there. And that's really probably one of the biggest things I'd recommend, right? If you're focusing on strategic planning, you hit it right. We're hitting the end of this year. It's fourth quarter. We're starting to review what we've done this year, and we're really starting to raise our eyes up and look into next year. You really need someone else there to kind of help with that process because it is expensive time. If you are not working in the business, if you're going to stop what you do, what you sell, what you're working on operationally. If you're going to stop doing that, it's really expensive time. So you want to maximize that time working on the business. And I just think there's it's more effective and efficient to bring someone to help you with that process.
That's an amazing point. And it's one that I've struggled with. You know, bringing in a consultant like yourself is expensive. It's not free. Being a part of a coaching program is not free. It takes both time and money. And I think that what I've come to over the years is that getting unstuck is a lot easier when you have a professional consultant that's helping you through it. You made the point that it's really easy to observe what should be going on in someone else's business, maybe then in our own scenario. And I've always found that with friends or loved ones, when someone's got a problem, it's so much easier for me to diagnose what the solutions could be. And I have a knack for that, you do too. So there's certain people that have a calling to that, to just understanding what could go better or how you could break through a problem. But when you bring someone else in, the savings in time, I think, is something that's very hard for business owners to quantify. And we often focus on what the price that costs to have a professional consultant. And I think probably the lost time is even more important. The old cliche is time is money. But it's so easy for us to focus on, well, you know, this is the amount of money I'm spending to bring someone else in. And I think it's really valuable. So I think it's great that you put that into perspective. So let's actually go into real life scenario. Chris is in my hometown in Denver, Colorado last week, helping us get through some strategic thoughts. So let's kind of help people understand what the day looked like. You know, you and I get together, you come and see our office, and then we go and do what's called a quarterly offsite. So the idea is let's get outside of the actual four walls of the business. We don't have to travel far. It doesn't have to be one of these extravagant vacation destinations, but we went to a vendor of mine that they let us use their personal conference room. And talk to me just about the benefit of getting outside of your business to do some strategic planning.
Yeah, there's really two pieces I'm looking for to make this a really effective use of your time, right? If we're saying this is an expensive time, A, from an investment of bringing someone in, but more costly than that, in my opinion, is you not working in the business, right? What you guys are often revenue producers. And so if you are stepping out of that role for an entire day, right, you're not making money. And you're also spending money bringing someone else in. There's two things I'm looking for when I'm coming in to help a company. One is if there's multiple leaders in the room and there's a team we're working with, you move at the speed of trust. And so I want to uncover any conflict. I want to push into conflict. I'm literally mining for conflict. I'm looking for it. So it's harder for you as a business owner to do this. Me, it's easier and I can kind of referee. But I want to put some of the issues on the table that are slowing us down and work through some of those things, because it'll actually build trust, which will help us move faster through the strategic planning portion. So that's one objective I always have. And it's actually a secondary objective, depending on how much time we have working through the strategic planning part. Now, the strategic planning part, I really want to start with the end in mind. And so really, if you're looking at fourth quarter and you want to focus on next year, right? I want to really spend some time working on some exercises to say, okay, what's the finish line at the end of 2018 that we want to cross, right? What does that look like? What is, as a leadership team, if it's December 31st, 2018, what's going to make us excited about what we've done this year? And so I want to set that, because that's going to be our anchor. And then we're going to start working backwards into what are the things that we need to accomplish to arrive there? What has to be true to get to that success, that finish line? And we then will start to break that down into quarterly rhythms, right? And so I want to then, okay, where do we need to focus on first? The end of this quarter, end of this year to finish the year out strong. What are the priorities in the first quarter? And so those are the two things that I want to focus on the offside. I want to make sure we're dealing with any issues and building trust. Once again, extremely important. Everything in your organization that you're going to accomplish is going to rise and fall on the trust of that leadership team. And then we've got to be really smart with our strategic planning, the things we're actually going to try to do. And so those are the two things I'm trying to accomplish when we go offsite.
So let's talk about leadership teams. Some of the people who will listen to this podcast are a solopreneur. They're a single agent. They're who we call Lone Rangers. They're doing everything on their own. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's how I started. That's how a lot of people start. And then there's others that are members of teams. So who goes into this room? Who's in the room if you're both a solopreneur working with a consultant, but then also if you're a team leader, but you also have some other strong individuals on your team, who do you suggest is in this quarterly offsite?
Yeah, right. There's pluses and minuses to both being a solopreneur and having a leadership team. So if you are a solopreneur, some of the advantages, you don't have a lot of drama or conflict with yourself, right? And so that's a good thing. You can move very quickly from an operational standpoint. Now, the problem is you don't have other people with you, either A, providing accountability, or B, other good ideas. There's not as much mind share. And so you lose some of the intellectual back and forth, hearing different personalities and ideas and thoughts, different perspectives. And so that's some of the challenges with being a solopreneur. Having a leadership team is great because you do have all that information, ideas. Hey, I'm seeing this in the business. If we focused on this, we could get this return, right? You're getting a plethora of information and ideas that we then have to mine through and prioritize. Okay, what's the low hanging fruit? What gives us the best return on our time and focus? And so that's a good thing. However, you've got relationship issues that happen when you get any two or more people together. There's going to be drama. There's going to be conflict. There's going to be baggage that everyone brings into that offsite. There's going to be all of these life scenarios that people have going on in their individual lives. And so we want to build unity with that team. It just takes a lot of work, right? Building that trust, knowing that we're going to walk out of that room tighter than we've ever been, knowing we have each other's backs, knowing we are all committed to the same strategic plan, the same priorities, the same goals. That's the challenge, right? Is getting everyone on the same page and working through all the trust issues that may be there. And there's always some, right? But the more trust you build, the faster you will be able to get things done throughout that year. So you'll all accomplish more. However, if there's relationship trust issues, what happens is everyone goes and does their own thing and we get less done and it's less focused. And so there's a lot of sideways energy and wasted focus on the wrong priorities, and we're not maximizing our time and money to get the best return. And so there's pluses and minuses of both. To answer your question about who should be in the room, there's layers to this. I would start with whoever your inner circle is, right? So as long as you've got the people that really speak into the business and that you trust to speak in and have a good understanding, I don't want to bring folks in that if there is a lot of trust issues or they're not quite ready for it, or, you know, it's the big kids table, right? And so it's pretty pointed. There's going to be conflict. There's going to be disagreements. And so if they're not mature enough, in your opinion, to handle that or quite there, do a little more coaching with them before you bring them into this. Get a few quarters under your belt with this process of strategic planning before you bring them in.
Well, I think that's great. And you actually answered the question before I even asked it as a follow-up. It's, you know, sometimes we think about, okay, who should be in the room, but we also need to think of the other side of that coin. The other part of the coin there is that who shouldn't be in the room. And I think that's important with these potentially difficult, strategic, arduous exercises. You want to make sure that it's going to be someone that's going to be supportive of the mission that you're trying to accomplish, but also it's someone that is not such a wimp, frankly, that they're not going to be able to speak into something that's a problem, or they're going to avoid conflict. Again, you said at the beginning that you're mining for conflict. You're actually trying to, in a very intentional way, stir up a little bit of conflict. And I know you well enough to know that that's not because you're combative or that you want to see people mix it up. It's to make sure that we're working through and resolving any issues that maybe are unsaid so far, so that we can then move forward into really a good positive situation going on for the next quarter. And I think if you don't mind for that conflict, you end up getting into this process where people aren't really sharing what needs to happen, and it stays too superficial at that point, and you can't really progress when you're staying right on the surface. So this is very intentionally a deep dive, and it should be uncomfortable at times. And I'll admit, last week there were several times where, man, I felt uncomfortable. And I felt uncomfortable not because you were making it an uncomfortable situation, but as the business owner, I think a lot of times we think, gosh, I've got all these great ideas and I'm the man or I'm the woman in this organization. And you feel like there's some success that you have, and then there's maybe a little bit of ego that's born with that success. And so I think it's important to have someone that can kind of poke into it and say, look, there's always progress here, and you haven't made it yet, and you will continue progressing forward, and you really never make it. So I think all those things are real important. So I like that you mine for conflict. And how do you approach that? If you're someone that maybe, you know, maybe there's a solopreneur on this podcast that's listening, and they've got a friend that's another solopreneur or lone ranger, maybe they can do that together. Someone can kind of sit in on another person's strategic planning and maybe help speak into that. So if you're the person that's mining for conflict, what are the things you're trying to do to help someone unpack what the issues are in their business?
Yeah, you're trying to build trust with them as well. It's easier as a third party to come in. You can get to the last 10% of truth, right? If you're in the business, people always hold back. People are uncomfortable with conflict. Like you said, it should never be a comfortable thing. But when you get it all out there, and if you can keep pushing a little, ask some clarifying questions to get a little more out, get folks to say a little more than what they would normally say about the issue, well, now we've got all the cards on the table and we can kind of resolve those things. And it's never as bad as it feels, right? And so what happens is when we get those cards on the table and it's uncomfortable and I say the things that I said I wasn't going to say, and I usually hold back, but we get it all out there, what happens is we then resolve those things and we also see, oh, that wasn't as bad. Well, what that does is it increases your trust in each other a little more. Okay, we can have disagreements. This is okay. And so we move a little quicker. We have a little more trust because of that. And so having someone else come in, asking clarifying questions, you can read the room, right? If someone's holding back a little bit or they're uncomfortable, push into it a little more. And that doesn't mean, once again, you're attacking, right? This should all be civil. It should not be aggressive at all. There should be boundaries. It shouldn't be pointed at each other. It should be pointed at issues. And so you're trying to get all of that out there. And then I'm trying to find the common ground, right? Okay, where do we both agree? And now here's where we divert. Let's talk through that stuff and hear both sides so everyone says their piece. And then let's come to a conclusion from there. And that's what's really powerful, right? And so you find the common ground, you connect that with the common goal, and then you come to agreement on a plan of responding to that and moving forward. Thinking about when we were there, you were uncomfortable multiple times. You should be. That should be uncomfortable. If it's not, something's wrong with you. If you like conflict, you need to get yourself checked out a little bit, right? Because that's not a good thing. You're not valuing the relationships the way you should. But, you know, Kyle, speak to this. Once we kind of work through some of those uncomfortable things, and they're usually easy to find, and usually I'll do a little digging beforehand and interview the folks that'll be in the room and kind of figure out what's going on in the dynamics. But once you guys work through some of that stuff, how do you feel after the fact? When we finished some of those uncomfortable conversations, Kyle, how did you feel after that?
Oh, it's a relief. I mean, it's what I would say is it's like pulling out a splinter. Yeah, it hurts. Probably got to dig in. You got to dig deep, get below the surface of the skin. But gosh, it feels like such a relief once you're done with it. And there's healing also. And I think that's the thing. And that's an analogy that, you know, that pulling out the splinter in our business, there's this relief that happens. There's this healing that happens after, especially if you've got a leader where the two of you have been working really hard at something. And sometimes you get to fisticuffs and it doesn't get resolved and you just march towards the next objective. Unless someone sits there and really says, hey guys, let's work through this. And this isn't something that's, you know, all touchy feely like a counseling. So just go with me here. It's not, you know, this is not family counseling, but it is conflict resolution. And I think that anybody that's a hard charger is going to end up ruffling a little bit of feathers every now and again. And I can ruffle feathers and then my feathers can get ruffled. So it feels great. It really does. And I think it's a positive exercise in the end. As you start it, it might not feel comfortable, but when you resolve it, it's amazing. It really does feel relieving.
You said that really well, right? It's not about this clinical session, right? It's not therapy, but you should enjoy work. You should enjoy who you work with, right? And so working through that stuff, that relief that you're talking about, is good and great, and it is a little therapeutic, and we can hold hands and sing Kumbaya, and we like each other, and that's good. That's important. Also, from the business side, that is increasing the trust between you guys. You move faster because of that relief. So it's not just that we feel better. It also allows for you to speed up on what you get done. And so when you're able to do that and you tie that conflict resolution with effective strategic planning and we're identifying the right things to focus on, guess what? You get more done on those things that you say are the most important things to work on. So they need to go hand in hand.
So let's talk about strategic planning as it relates to the quarter. Once you start this process and you methodically go quarter by quarter with some strategic planning, you're going to create what I know that you call and what Entree Leadership calls your quarterly rocks or your strategic priorities. So how do you approach reviewing what happened over the past quarter and then also maybe forecasting or budgeting in a way what is going to happen?
Yeah, I want to spend a little time looking backwards, more analyzing the rhythm of execution, where we could have improved on the efficiencies of execution, more so than what we chose as our strategic priorities. I'll spend a little time on that, right? I want to look at the numbers. I want to look at some of that stuff, but it's behind us, right? I don't want us to beat ourselves up mm-hmm. or pat ourselves on the back too long either way. That stuff's behind us. I like more analyzing of the efficiency of getting things done, the process, the rhythm, the execution model we used, analyze that for improvements. That is always good, but I really want to spend more time looking forward. Okay, great. We either completed these things or we didn't. Now let's say, okay, say we knocked out our top two strategic priorities. This third one, we got only 25% of the way through. Well, let's throw it back in the mix for things to focus on this quarter and see if it shakes out to be the most important thing. But you really want, in my opinion, a fresh, clean slate for the next quarter. This is why we do a quarterly rhythm, so you can get laser focused on those strategic priorities and not get distracted by the millions of ideas and the whirlwind of life and business and all the other things that distract. If you can just say, hey, these are my top three things, that is it. We are going to live and die on these three things. It's only for a quarter. Nothing's going to fall apart. Nothing's, and then you get to reanalyze everything and get a clean slate again and say, okay, now new quarter. We got two of those things done. Let's start fresh. What's the most important things now? What gets the greatest return? So you have that kind of closer finish line. It's enough to get some good work done, but it's also a finish line that's soon enough that we can pivot or make any adjustments for the following quarter if need be. But it also acts as boundaries, right? We're not going to look at other strategic priorities once we've decided what these three are for the quarter, right? We're going to just kill these things. We're going to move as fast as we can on them. We're going to get as much done as we can on them. And then we will stop, analyze, look back, briefly analyze the what we've done, and then really focus on, okay, great. Now let's look at where we're at and look forward. Now what's most important? What are the most important things that we can get laser focused on and do it again for another 3 months?
Yeah, I think it's great. I love the idea of let's briefly analyze, and you can call it analyze. You can, some businesses call it that we're going to do an autopsy. My brother who is in the military says that after every mission, they would do an after action review, which is real simple. It's, you know, what was the plan? Number one. Okay, so what actually happened? So we planned something, but it's always going to act a little bit differently, or something's going to happen a little bit differently than we planned it. So, you know, what actually happened versus what was the plan? What could we have done to maybe be more successful? Also, what factors contributed to our success, and what should we do next time? And I think that if you do an autopsy, if you do a debrief, an after-action review, et cetera, if you analyze what happened, there's learning in that, and there's learning through failure, and it's something that we speak a lot about on this podcast. So I think it's, as you mine for conflict, as you think about what could have been done, let's not park on it and dwell on it so that we can't advance and move forward. But you do need to kind of address some of those things so that you can unlock the next strategic priorities. And so one thing that I heard from you, and I'm just thinking about this as an entrepreneur and as a realtor, you know, I could be a little bit spastic. I got 1,000 ideas. And as we approach strategic priorities, how many should we have in one quarter?
No, it kind of depends on your bandwidth. So no more than three. Like, probability shows that if you have more than three, the likelihood that you finish any of them drops to 0% within the fourth or fifth priority, right? And so that comes from Jim Collins. You're not going to get more than three done well, right? And so you won't complete, get anything across the finish line if you have too many things that you're trying to focus on, right? The whole point of focus is that we limit those things down. If you have three, I think that's a good number. The key is then really prioritizing those three. If we only get one thing done this quarter, we're going to say what it is and we're going to define it and we're going to make sure that's the thing that we get done. Those shouldn't compete for resources. If there's a competition for time or resources, number one gets it every time. And so that's more important. You may not get to two and three depending on your bandwidth or your team size or any of that kind of stuff. So great. If you knock out the number one most important thing every quarter and you do that for a year, your business is at a whole nother level. And so it's really important to prioritize those properly and really define what winning on those things looks like and then just get after them. And if there's any competition for time or resources or attention or focus, number one gets it.
Well, let's get really tactical here and talk about maybe a couple of categories or examples that people will make their strategic priority or their quarterly rocks. And so for me, it was organizational structure. That's what we really hammered into. We had been operating with one organizational structure for years. It wasn't that that was a problem, but we had outgrown that organizational structure and we needed to get several layers into what the organizational structure looked like. And that can be an org chart. It can also just be who's reporting to who, which is also part of an org chart. Revenue is often a big strategic priority for people. But also with revenue comes expenses. You know, if you're wanting to make more, a higher profit margin, you can either increase your revenue or decrease your expenses, or maybe in a perfect world, both. So those are, you know, probably three things that I see a lot of people. What are some other suggestions that you'd have as people look at strategic priorities?
Yeah, so, you know, very often one of the first, when I'm just working with the company for the first time, organizational structure is a big, big one, right? Because usually why they're bringing me in, usually why they're looking at strategic planning to this level is because they're at a scaling point, right? And so when you're at a scaling point, what happens is you had a team and everyone's wearing a bunch of hats and we're making it happen, but we're about to go off the rails, right? Everyone's going 110% and we're just really good at making things happen. But we know to get to the next level, we've got to get a little more specialized. We've got to realign who's doing what. And so a lot of times when you're in these scaling points of your business, that's what we need to focus on is this organizational structure. Okay, great. Let's lay it out. Who reports to who? What are the functions of the business now? Where are we going to hire next? Where's the support? Do we need revenue producers? Do we need back-end support to them, right? It's a much bigger thing than just coming up with an organizational chart. It's really making sure that, hey, 5 years from now, we want to be at 50 million. What's the organizational structure that gets us there? Because that's going to allow us to start figuring out where to hire, who to hire, when to hire, and help us kind of navigate who leads who, what's going to break first, where do we need to create support. You said revenue. I don't allow revenue to be a strategic priority. That should always be. We're in business, right? So we're trying to make more. So when someone says revenue, I say, great, awesome goal. For me, a strategic priority is what are we going to do to drive more revenue? So maybe it's creating a new product or service, or maybe that's a strategic priority, or maybe it's a bottom line, it's a profit margin growth. So maybe we're going to eliminate a cost center that's costing too much or whatever that is. And so we're going to outsource it over here. That's a strategic priority because there's like specific thing we're trying to accomplish to generate more revenue or to decrease expenses. And so I always push a little deeper on the revenue piece because all of this should be driving towards an increase in revenue. That's what we're trying to do. That's how we keep score. Other things, there can be tons of things, right? A lot of times when companies are scaling, it's a leadership development piece. Okay, now to get to that next level, we're going to need more leaders than just me. And so what is the plan to develop some of our team and create a farm system to develop them to be leaders within our organization? What do they need to know from the business side? Where do they need training on the people side? So leadership development is always a big one. A lot of times it could be a new marketing initiative. Hey, we haven't done anything from digital marketing. This quarter, we are going to just create a priority around digital marketing, and we're going to get laser focused on that to generate new leads to drive revenue, right? So all of these things should be pointing towards revenue, but those are just a few examples.
Yeah, I love that. And it goes back to Jim Collins, right? Jim Collins says that the revenue, money, it's not good or bad. It's necessary. It's life for an organization. It's like oxygen. It's like water. It's like food. You know, we don't really think about it until all of a sudden it's not there. So the revenue, there always has to be a push towards it. But it can't be the thought or the priority, like I need to breathe today. It's like, no, that just needs to naturally happen. And you need to support revenue. But I think diving deeper into, okay, what are these new objectives that are going to add revenue to our existing revenue, I think is the important way to look at it. So we've created some strategic priorities. What do we do with them now? Obviously, we've created a plan that creates a roadmap for us. And it's not just a quarterly roadmap. This is all leading towards our year goals, or maybe our 5-year goals, and they become foggier as you get further and further away from that finish line. So, you know, it's easy to think about things in a quarter. It's a little bit harder to think about things 12 months from now, and it's even harder to think about things 5 years from now. But once you've got your strategic priorities, what are we doing with these things? Are we and I'm being a little facetious here. Are we putting these in a notebook and never looking at them? I've done that before. I'll admit it.
We all have.
I've got a lot of drawers in my desk that are really, really intelligent because they've got all this information in them, but I'm never looking at it. So what do you do with it? How do you, you know, create that culture of keeping score? You alluded to that, and that's something I know we talk about a lot, but how do you create this scoreboard within your organization?
Yeah, there's two pieces that are really important to me to maximize the execution, right? Number one, when we're doing an offsite and we're focusing on our strategic priorities, great. We've identified our top three. These are what we're going to work on fourth quarter 2017. We've got them in the right order. Well, then I want to define what the finish line is on those, what winning looks like on those, because these things are usually big, hairy objectives. You know, great, I just said digital marketing is going to be a focus. Well, what does that mean? What do we want to accomplish? Because that could be, you know, a huge thing that takes years and years to do, or that's not what we're looking for. We want to define what a successful quarter in digital marketing would look like. And so I want to create what winning looks like in that. And that could be a checklist of things we want to accomplish. It could be just a list of things. It could, whatever it looks like for you guys, right? And so for me, and I want to get as specific as possible because it's going to drive what you were talking about, the execution, right? It's going to eliminate sideways energy. We're going to be really focused on the actions that are going to lead us to accomplishing this strategic priority and completing it. And so I want to get really specific and say, okay, so we're going to have a CRM in place, and we're going to capture, we're going to create a lead magnet, and we're going to market it on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn, and that's going to be campaigns are going to be launched before the end of the year, and we're going to be capturing those leads in a CRM, and we're going to launch a newsletter to that list in January. So we need to start create a template for our newsletter. We need to have the creative done. We need to have some content stockpiled, getting ready to go, right? I want to define as specifically as possible what winning on this thing looks like, because then the most important part is executing on it, right? When we go back to the office the next day, life happens. All the business stuff that was ongoing happens. The whirlwind hits you, and you lose track of what we just said was important, and the notebook goes into the drawer and we don't pull it out because we're, you know, putting out fires and talking to this customer and this customer and this one has a problem, and we you know, whatever happens, right? And so for me, it's time to execute. So having a very specific checklist of what we want done is important, because that's setting our finish line. And then the next thing is a weekly rhythm to continue to discuss progress on achieving those strategic priorities, completing those. And so everyone who is in that leadership team that's a part of that strategic planning needs to get together every week. This is important to me. Every week we get together, 30 minutes, an hour, I don't care what it is, but we're going to say, okay, we said digital marketing was the most important thing. What are the first steps we need to do? Okay, Kyle, you're going to go do this by next week. I'm going to go do this by next week. Great. We come back the following week and say, Kyle, did you do your part? Yeah, I did. Awesome. What's next? Well, now I've got to go do this. Great. Go do it. Chris, did you do your part? No, actually, this came up. Well, do you need help to get it done? Or are you going to be able to get it done? No, I'll have it done by tomorrow. It's that accountability, right? Okay, what are you going to do after that? Well, once we accomplish this piece, the next layer is that it's just turning into action, 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 and accountability. And so you have to have that rhythm, and you have to have the leadership holding each other accountable to that, or you're not going to get as much done as you could on what you already said, and you spent money bringing someone in, and we took time out of the office. We said, these are the most important things for us to get to the goal we're trying to accomplish. And you're not going to get the stuff done, because life's going to happen if you don't have that weekly rhythm of accountability.
Yep. And I think it's a great segue to one of our final questions. And I think the path to success is often born out of failure. Dave Ramsey, one of your mentors, a guy that I've met before, but a guy that you've spent a lot of time with, both working with and just also collaborating with, often says that success is often standing on a mountain of failure. And so as we're working on getting past something and getting business owners unstuck, this podcast is all about education, but it's also about empowerment and encouragement. And so as you're looking into, okay, let's get past a failure, maybe share some ways that you personally kind of deal with, hey, this didn't work out. How do you kind of get through failure? And maybe some actual examples of things that just haven't worked out for you, but you say, you know what, I found a way to get through it.
You know, one of the biggest things, I think, because once again, being a business owner, it is lonely, and you don't have a lot of folks that you can talk to about successes or failures that understand it really. So one of the things I try to tell myself, and I try to tell other business owners, is celebrate failures. It really is an ingredient to success. You know, we get that, you know, we hear that your success is a mountain of failures, right? We get that intellectually. In our own worlds, we don't operate that way, right? Like, we hold ourselves to a standard of perfection. That's not real. And if you feel like you're being perfect, you're not doing enough and you're not on the path to success. Failure is an important ingredient to that. So I try to change my mindset to embrace failure. Now, I want to minimize it. Like, I'm not looking for it, right? But it's going to happen. And so just when it happens, the key is getting past it as fast as you can. And so for me, celebrating it, recognizing it as a step forward, helps me get past it and not wallow in it for a long time. And man, I'm better than that. I shouldn't have done that. I should have seen this. You know, we beat ourselves up, and you get that head talk going because you have no one else to speak truth into your life because you're the business owner on your own, is a really challenging place. So try to spin that to positive head talk, right? Celebrate the failures. For me personally, I mean, there's just so many failures in my life that just speak into, you know, I feel like I've had a really successful life. It's because of all the failures. Like, I, you know, I've learned a lot of things by failing. And so for me, the important ones, the ones that stick out, is when I forget about people, when I forget about relationships, I get too operational. Those are the ones that are harder for me to get over. When I hurt relationships or value relationships less to get something done, those are the ones that come back and haunt me personally. And so that's why I am very particular when I'm doing strategic planning to really look at the relationships in the room, mine for conflict, to try to get people past that and build trust, right? Because it really is all about people. That your team is how you're going to get any real success, right? If you're trying to get beyond where you're at, you're going to need people to help you get there. And so for me personally, it really all comes down to people and relationships. And so the ones that haunt me the most are the ones where I sacrificed relationships or was short or prideful and, you know, injured relationships because of it.
Yeah, I think it's key to be open about that. And I appreciate you digging into that, because we've all had struggles with people that we've worked with, whether they're our coworkers, but then also you just have loved ones that, you know, on a personal level you have struggles with. And I've often found that most of the time we weren't that far off from a misalignment, but the lack of discussion about it is usually the issue. So the mining for conflict part of it, I think, is great. As it relates to this podcast, you know, the encouragement component is that you're naturally, if you're stretching, if you're trying to achieve something, you're going to fall short. and that's okay. And I think that the best thing that I heard as I'm just kind of distilling everything that you've said is that create this environment where it's appropriate and okay to speak verbally with the people that are your mentors, but also the people that are in your leadership group about things that didn't work out. Hiding failure is often one of the worst things to do. And so I had an amazing mentor that I started off with. It was my wife's cousin. This guy is a real estate giant, and I worked with him for a number of years. And he used to just openly say, "Hey, we had a learning experience today." And he would slow things down for me, just like I do with my kids. He would say, "Hey, look, here's how I saw it happen. Here's some things that you could probably do along the way to maybe get a little bit better, but don't worry about it. Also get over it." And in the words of Ari Gold from Entourage, he would also say, "Let's hug it out. You know, it's no big deal. We're going to get it figured out. Let's move on. Move onward and upward." And so I think as we're approaching failure, let's think about it that way. Look at it objectively, almost like a scientist, right? Calibrate is, hey, this is what our desired result is. We kind of got a little off the mark, but what can we do to tweak things so that we can get a little bit closer to our desired result, right? So finally, I always love to ask my guests, you know, this idea of Dear Younger Me, which is a famous song by a band called Mercy Me. It's the idea of you're writing a letter to yourself. It's the advice you wish you knew when you were 22. So if you've got someone that's close to you that's 22 years old, Chris, what advice would you give to them, especially if they're in real estate, but if they're just an entrepreneur, someone that's looking at, you know, the world and they want to take the world by the horns and really accomplish a lot of things, what advice would you give to someone that's younger in business?
I want to answer that in two parts. So sorry, bear with me. First, like to say, I had some of the best advice when I was about 24. I think I was in a mentoring group with some business guys in Atlanta. And I had to read a book. I was forced to read a book called The Principle of the Path by Andy Stanley. And it was basically everything in life. There's this principle of the path. Every decision I make is taking me along the path I want to be on or off of it, right? And so you have to recalibrate, if you will, and to get back on your path. Well, the challenge of that is when you are young, you don't really know the path you want to be on. And so one of the exercises we had to do, I had to actually write my own obituary, and I had to put quotes from my spouse and my colleagues and my children and grandchildren and friends. I had to really think about the end of my life, who I wanted to be as a person. From that exercise, I designed my personal mission statement. It has been such a compass for me in my entire life, and I am a lot farther along than I should be in life because of that. Like, I fully attribute it to that exercise. And so that was great advice that I got and was forced to do at a young age. So I'd recommend everyone do that. It's been huge. Now, me sitting back and going back 15 years to that time again, what would I say to myself, or what would be the letter I'd write? The marketplace moves so fast nowadays, and it tries, and people try to be everything for everybody. I would have started earlier specializing in the areas that I felt I was gifted and made and wired to excel in. This concept of deep work, there's a lot of books on it right now, a lot of people talking about it, but I don't see a lot of people doing it. And so I would really focus on your own gifting, self-awareness, who you are and what you're made to do, and really start going deeper in those areas and not worrying about trying to be the jack of all trades, trying to be the best marketer and the best salesperson and the best finance guy. And, you know, there's pieces that everyone should know and be able to talk, but I would spend that extra time getting to know myself and specializing in my gifting. And I'd tell myself to focus on that.
Wow, that's huge, huge advice. The fact that you're in a mentoring group when you're in your 20s is such a humbling experience. And I think you've got to be a humble person to do that, to say, look, I don't have it all figured out. And I think that's often very difficult for us when we're young, whether you're 20 or 25 or 30, depends on who you are. But just the idea that, hey, I need to learn from people who've been there before. And that's what consuming podcasts and reading books and asking mentors is all about. The idea of writing an obituary, you know, decades, hopefully, before you actually pass away. It's that Stephen Covey start with the end in mind concept from the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. I mean, this is huge stuff. So if you only listened to the last 2 minutes. I mean, it's absolute gold. So Chris Oakley, I mean, that was huge. Thank you so much for that advice. I feel deeply indebted to you for so many reasons, and we're good friends, and you have stretched me and helped me grow my business. So thank you for the time. I think everybody is smarter for having spent some time observing this podcast. And I would just love to say to everybody that's listening, tune in. We do this every 2 weeks. It's on every other Friday. And for my good friend, Chris Oakley, this is the Calibrate Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Malnati. And as I love to say, we will see you around the neighborhood. Thanks, guys.